SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
From Saratoga Racecourse, a very good Thursday, race fans. Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964, if you're listening to Sirius XM online. And at our website, stevepick.com. And how many times can we package the opening day like no other? How many? let's just roll. Let's just get going, and we'll take it from here. There was, coming into today, there was both good news locally and some very difficult news across the country, and in a snapshot that we'll flesh out certainly as the morning unfolds. Here in New York, the okay coming late, 3 o'clock yesterday afternoon, from the health officials and the governor's office, that owners, that the plan that NYRA submitted to the state to have owners and some guests attend the races, that was approved. And not in time to get owners set for today, and so they'll have to just watch from afar for today, but tomorrow, starting tomorrow, and I'll go through the procedures. In fact, Pat McKenna is going to come and sit for a couple of minutes early in the show, and we'll go through the procedures that, you know, those of you planning to come at some point during the meet, and particularly if you're planning on coming in the short term, the specifics of what you've got to do to gain access, both in the mornings to watch training and in the afternoons to watch your horse, and you know, be able to sit in the backyard a little bit and go to the track apron to watch the race, then adjourn back toward the backyard. But the owner's side of things, a good first step, and very encouraging, I would imagine, and I'm sure, you know, met with a very welcome reception. I just know from our circle of partners at our little group at TT, particularly our friend Dave Brown, who and Dave's got horses as well with Pocket Aces, so he is wild-eyed. This is one of those owners that the game dreams about, that wants to be involved in as many horses as possible. So he was thrilled. He must have asked me six or eight times since Belmont Day, do you think they'll be able to come to Saratoga? I'm encouraged. I'm encouraged. Well, now the word comes yesterday on the negative front, and the news out of Del Mar that started early in the afternoon and then reached an apex with the announcement that the weekend was postponed, was canceled, essentially. And testing of the jocks room resulted in over a dozen positives. And so they're going to monitor, you know, the jocks, and they'll retest for next week. And ideally, that is just a 1 week hiatus. And not longer. There was initially some concerns and some thoughts that they might, you know, sit out the full fortnight of quarantine period. But given, you know, the advanced testing that went into this result, they think that if they retest next week and guys get the all clear, they'll be able to run the races as they'd like to, you know, have them. Particularly, you know, it's particularly difficult when you've realized that you know, you had the San Diego schedule for Saturday, and it's the traditional prep toward the Pacific Classic and so forth. And certainly that field was, highly anticipated. So, difficult news out of Del Mar, and, a lot of this is reaction to what has gone on with the other jocks and with what transpired out of Los Al, and from what everybody has said and reported, there wasn't as much concern and vigilance as there obviously needs to be on a going basis, and so tight restrictions and protocols, that have no leeway, are going to be the watchword if meets are going to proceed. It's that simple. So that was the negative, and obviously we feel badly for the owners. Already were feeling, I think, put upon and frustrated at not being able to attend or not being able to watch the horses work in the morning, and now not even in some cases they'll bring those races back, and they'll put them on the overnight as extras to fill in, but very, very difficult. Let's just leave it at that. Feel badly for everybody. Meanwhile, when it came to racing, we'll talk about the Canterbury results last night, and we were looking forward to it. It was like every other experience so far at Canterbury, with crazy results, and there are a couple of horses that you look back down at your PPs and you said, wait a minute, how did that happen? It seems like there's been a longest shot on the board win a race in each of these sequences on a nightly basis. We'll go through that in a minute. I also want to mention that at Indiana on this opening day at Saratoga, Indiana deserves some attention because they've got a carryover in their pick five. And they paid, I think it was $175 for four of five yesterday. And at the end, there was a $40 horse and then a $70 horse. And there had been, I think, a $20 horse as well in the sequence. So the first carryover in these low takeout pick fives, and it comes at Indiana. And I'll glance at that sequence with you in a little bit. Meanwhile, the draws for Saturday, and most notably the draw for the Haskell card at Monmouth, and the field ended up after losing Ette Indienne with a minor setback. That certainly took a little bit of a little, took at least one principal out of the field, but the rest of the Haskell and the rest of the card on Saturday at Monmouth came up terrific. The UN as well, of course, and the Molly Pitcher. The Molly Pitcher closes out a sequence of six stakes, so in all stakes, pick 5-2 and pick 4, the Molly Pitcher with 11 in there, and the Monmouth Cup got 10. They've also got the Wolf Power, the Matchmaker. Matchmaker drew 8. But the Haskell, of course, the principal. And let's run it down. Dr. Post. And you'd heard with the jockey news that Joe Bravo was picking up the mount on Dr. Post for Vinny Viola. And Todd Pletcher leaves from the rail. Authentic. And we'll get to the Bob Baffert disqualifications as expected in Oaklawn, and a 15-day suspension for Baffert from the 1st of August to August 15th. But more importantly, for Gamin, it doesn't mean a whole lot because she's already gone on to success. But for Charlatan, it's a real blow. And, having a grade one victory stripped, and of course with him you know, dealing with a, you know, somewhat minor issue, you know, you still got to come back and try to, you know, try to recapture something like a grade one. And that's the biggest penalty that comes out of the news from Arkansas. Authentic, with Mike Smith named, and I have not seen if Smith is, how that is playing out, actually, and we'll find out about that. Authentic from the two hole. Jesus's team for Group 07C coming out of Florida draws the three, and Nick Juarez is going to ride. Jose D'Angelo, who took over from Jose Garofalo on, did we say Jesus' team or Jesus' team? Ancient Warrior for Jerry Hollendorfer, the four, and Trevor McCarthy is riding, coming off the return to action at Churchill, third behind Banks Island in an allowance. Then Fame to Famous, John McAllen, Jose Farrar going to ride. And Farrar got off to a good start at last week, the start here of the season for Monmouth. It's 6 for 23 with 5 seconds, actually. Lebda, Calumet bred raison d'etat colt, last seen in the Ohio Derby, where he was 6-1, and certainly came back to Laurel for Claudio Gonzalez and has worked nicely coming out of the Ohio Derby. And speaking of the Ohio Derby, I saw where Dean Martini is intended for the Ellis Park Derby by Tom Amos. Alex Cintron, named to ride, and Cintron has been associated with him since the heft back at the end of the year. And New York Traffic for Safi Joseph and Paco Lopez back aboard, coming off the second in the Matt Wynn. So the major players, obviously, Authentic and New York Traffic and Dr. Post, those are the three, you know, heavy hitters, and then we'll look to somebody, you know, to try to invade. You know, why not this Jesus's team, the Tappeture Colt? A kind of horse that wants to be part of the race flow? Tell you what, it took a big jump forward. You know, 25 non-2 winner. That was in May, and then went to an allowance. He's going to, you know, make the transition here to two turns, although he did do two turns on the turf at the beginning of the year at Gulfstream. But he certainly seems like a better horse as the year has gone on. Jesus's team in those familiar green jacket of Grupo 7C. So there's your Haskell. And the rest of that sequence, just terrific. Up and down. Matchmaker. Christophe Clement, that Feel Glorious coming out of the New York. And Varenka, who did not run great in her 4-year-old debut for Grand Motion, but I wouldn't think that was representative. Joe Bravo gets to ride for Chad, Beautiful Lover for our friend Paul Pompa as well. And Chad's also got Nay Lady Nay coming off the mid-julep try as well. And also Tap It Today for Bill Lawrence and Peter Bradley, the Tap It 5-year-old mare who actually, after over a year, almost year and a half off at the end of last year, ran pretty well in the Sewanee. So tap it today, and that's a nice group. The one surprise was that that I was a little, when I went to look at the UN, I was a little surprised that Chad not involved there, surprisingly. Field of nine for the grade one, one of the great turf races in this country, and one of the races, you know, along with the DC International, you know, that really made, you know, the early strides going back to, you know, going back really 60 years. And the UN got a field of nine, including Arklo, after just talked to Brad Cox. I'm surprised, actually, that looking at this, that Brad did not mention that he was going to bring Arklo right back out of the Elkhorn last week. Standard deviation for Grand Motion, Mugs-O-Matic for Maker, Eve's Metal, trainer John Stevens, Aquaphobia, now seven, Maker, coming out of the Wise Dan, Current for Todd, out of the Tiller, Dionysus shows up in here, now with Cyril Murphy, and Corelli for Jonathan Thomas, adds blinkers and Lasix, and then, of course, the upset winner that that made the Belmont meet profitable in a lot of ways, Perrette, the Australian 6-year-old for Matt Shearer and partners, and Chucky Lawrence, and will certainly be a, I don't see why he doesn't go favored with Arklo, and I suppose Current will compete, and the Jonathan Thomas is going to draw attention with Corelli. So there's a couple of looks, a quick glance at what's ahead at Monmouth here, Saratoga, too. Don't forget, we got Saturday action, the Hall of Fame, early on the card. And then the Coaching Club American Oaks, which drew six. And kind of an interesting group, too. Tonal Shape shows up, adds blinkers, Antoinette, one of the two Mots in here. Chad's got Altaf for Shadwell, Velvet Crush for Rudy Brissett. Bob Baffert tries Crystal Ball for Windstar Stablemates, and Windstar Stablemates also sends Paris Lights, this one trained by Mott. So six in the Oaks, and the Hall of Fame, they've got seven, where Decorated Invader will compete, essentially, it seems, with Stablemate Guffo. You know, both coming off of wins and meeting up in the 3-year-old standard, going a mile and an eighth, the Hall of Fame, and with no Hall of Fame scheduled, the induction ceremonies. As a result, there's no real particular, you know, timing issue to run the Hall of Fame. So it ends up on opening weekend. So there you go. Dave Grenick just came by. I think Dave is going to join us, so maybe we'll swap Dave out with Pat, and have Pat follow. And Pat, something always draws Pat away anyway. A quick look. While we wait for Dave Grenick, let me give you the results from last night at Canterbury. And I kind of, you know, when Ask Bailey won the Northbound Pride Oaks, I thought, okay, all right, this is a good start. And that was Maker for WSS and Hooties Racing and Francisco Arrieta. That started the stakes sequence. Tut's Revenge, though, I was a little surprised. That was the Mystic Lake Mile. Nice win for Clinton Stewart. Claim to fame stable. This is an Escondorea four-year-old. And Roman Carinas with a good ride and you know, held off the obvious favorites. That race got pretty decimated. We already knew that No Brag, Just Facts, the defending winner, wasn't going to be able to participate. But, of course, the Black Album also came out. But then Don't Ask, Don't Tell and Hunk of Burning Love. So all of a sudden the thing scratched down to five and Temple looked, you know, looked very imposing. Barely was able to manage to hold third when it came down to it. So nice win for Clinton Stewart, who we've had on. Summer Assault started the pick five, and I thought to myself, okay, this is a decent start because I only used Summer Assault and Angelus Warrior, who was a little under even money. I thought, okay, good start. $6 winner and change, second choice, and, you know, beats the odds on. This is Jared Loveberry for Michelle Boyce out of Chicago. And Summerfront, three-year-old gelding. Nice stake victory. Had earlier placed in the Columbia this winter down at Tampa. Summer Assault. This is a group. Kevin Marco, Last Call Racing Partnership, and Union Park Thoroughbreds, and Cherry Woo. That's the owner. So congratulations there. Then came an upset that completely, just ended everything. It ended the pick four try before it even got going, and it killed the pick five. Central Park, longest shot on the board. And, you know, one thing, I've been saving all of these charts and all of these pick five sequences, looking for clues and themes as we've been talking. And I can tell you that these longest shot on the boards, and this probably isn't, a revelation, but invariably they've been wire-to-wire winners. You know, where a horse, whether a longest shot on the board or not, a horse that, just on paper doesn't look to have much of a chance, but gets out on a lead and can't be reeled in. And that's been one common thing that I've seen at both Indiana and at Canterbury when going back and looking through those pick five results. You'll see regularly, I think. Obviously, you're looking for hints that, if there's only two horses, let's say, that are supposed to be on the lead. And what happened here was Jerry's Pride and Joy, was in the, the front group, but didn't really have the speed that you kind of expected. And as a result, Central Park, for the first half mile, actually, was in amongst there was also all under control, but able to just go on with it and upset this field at 35-1 pays 72.60, and then frankly Streak of Luck in the Lady Canterbury, and this was Kelly Ackerman who just took over on Streak of Luck, five-year-old old-fashioned mare, and Calbred actually, and Streak of Luck at 13-2, and I beat Winning Envelope, and again this was on the front end, back on the turf in this case, but I this was not a horse that I that I really looked at seriously at any point, so. You could tell that now we're three legs in to the pick five, and it's kind of spinning out of control. There was a scratch that enabled you potentially to single in the Honor the Hero, and that was essentially that Well Abled would be alone on the lead when Uncle Goyle scratched, and that's the way that played out. 3-5, well-abled. Chief Cicatrice ran well on the grass and was a hard-trying second. Loveberry on the Shackleford six-year-old for Larry Rivelli and Mrs. Wilson. And then in the nightcap, that kind of murky-looking maiden claimer group, it was formful. It was very formful and a little bit techie. That was the one, the Super Saver that we mentioned. It felt like a little bit techie, Polar Sense. Who was the disappointment here? There was one horse that kind of disappointed a little bit. Oh, Miss Aggie Bling kind of chased and then folded up and ended up struggling home. But a little bit techie, closed it out for Diodoro and Empire Racing Stables. Jason Bullard, congratulations. Super Saver. Philly breaks her maiden and sends her people home with a pick five payout of $5,500, essentially. $5,495. The pick five, $146,000 in that pool. And it was a very good night at Canterbury. They did over $2 million. And as we wait for Grenig, he's in the racing office. I'll quickly give you the Indiana grand details about today. That group of races yesterday, 4 of 5 paid $175. That's how much it spun out of control. And there's a carryover of $53,000. You would have to think they'll bring in a good $300,000 this afternoon on the sequence. But you had a 38-1 shot. That for Andy Brown, a horse that he owns and trains and bred. A daughter of Santiva, first time starter, 38-1. And that's pretty cool. You know, he did everything but ride. He also had a 20-1 shot, Je Suis Belle, win the feature. And that for Scott Mullins and owner Chris Ryan. So between those two races, a carryover in the pick five at Indiana today. And you're looking at a sequence that starts at 3:40 Eastern. So fold Indiana into your Saratoga work. Starts with an Indiana bred allowance. 8 of them going short. These are boys. Then you've got a 1/16 on the turf. A nice second level allowance, including Eskin for it. And who we keep an eye on, Margolis and the that's the Brilliant Racing team, I think, right? Yeah, I think that's Brilliant. Mark it off, though, in here for Eddie Keneally, who's a nice horse, and Power Player for Phil D'Amato. So nice group of open company, second-level allowance turf types going 1/16. You got an Indiana-bred made special weight with some firsters, 3-, 4-, or 5-year-olds, going 5.5 furlongs. And Big Dave, and I love it. Indiana-bred, 5.5. You do have 4 first-time starters, including Youngblood for Paul Holtis and Rodney Prescott from inside, 3-1. So there must be, I didn't look at PPs for this, but just the fact that that this firster is 3-1 tells you a little bit. And, you know, those that have run, it really doesn't look, at least based on buyers, like they've done much running. So the firsters probably got to be looked at closely. There's a handful of halos for Izzy Garcia as well on the outside, 6-1, and Amazing Tizcat for Tommy Short with Robbie Alvarado. That's the 2. So 3 firsters that are 3-1, 6-1, and 8-1. 5-2 favorite, Gennaro Garcia with Colonel Hubert. And did 2 back, did run well enough to win. Third level combined condition claiming group going 1/16 on the turf, a group of 9. Then there's Indiana bred maiden special weight again, second kind of a second division of that group we just looked at. And in here you've got another 4 firsters, the lowest one being Garcia with Big Gray Express, 6-1, and that's the anchor leg. So pick 5 carryover at Indiana. All right, let's wrap up that's the Canterbury and Indiana report. We'll put that away. So now I can turn our attention. And waiting to see, okay, Pat's coming too. So what's going to happen here is that Pat and and Dave will end up showing up at exactly the same time. I can see that happening now. I'll also mention tomorrow, let me get this, let me clear off as much of this stuff as I can. There's a couple of stakes tomorrow at in Ohio that caught my eye. The Tomboy at Belterra and the Buckeye Native. And it looks like they got nice fields, actually. The Tomboy, State Bred Fillies, going a mile and a 16th on the grass, three-year-olds, and then the three and up boys. The Buckeye Breds, the Buckeye Native, mile and a 16th on the turf. So a couple of stakes. I'm literally just going to go through my stack of news and clear off as much as possible here while we wait for the boys. The sale results yesterday. Let me slip that in. And yesterday did not seem as brisk as the opening session did at OBS. You had a $270,000, not this time, colt that led the session, and this is a pretty nice pinhook from a $19,000 yearling, it's a New York bred actually, that Sequel and Stone Street bred, consigned by Nick Demerick and bought for Toby Morton. So the Toby Morton will show up with John Kimmel, I would imagine. And $270,000, not this time, continues to light up the board. The highest filly yesterday was a half hours. This was the filly, and the top colt was a half hours Louisiana bred that Dennis O'Neill took home, consigned by Blue River and bred by Summerhill in Louisiana. So you also had a $175,000 Palace Malice filly, Ontario bred, a little bit of everything as always at OBS. So that's a quick glance, and we might talk to Tom Ventura at some point today, and we'll go over the future wagers. We will go over the future wagers soon, and there is another round. There's also going to be another opportunity to bet on the Oaks field as well. Dave Grenick joins us, and you're good. Don't touch. Just like we did it, at Belmont. I'm social microphoning.
Gotcha.
There we go. Give a little volume. Let me see. Say hello, Dave Grenick.
How you doing, Steve?
There it is, Dave Grenick, everybody. And
oh, by the way, Steve, congratulations on the Bill Handelman Award. I assume you won't be able to accept it in person. I don't know. Are you going down there?
I'm trying to figure that out.
Okay, but well deserved. Congratulations. There should be a lot more awards coming your way. But that's a good one to get. Bill Handelman was a terrific, terrific person. I learned a lot from him when I, cut my teeth in this job in Jersey and Monmouth Park. And Bill was a big help to me. He was also enjoyable company. And, that's a great award to get. So congratulations.
Thanks very much. I was really touched, and I was actually shocked. I got the call from John Himes, and Bill Handelman, I only got to know a tiny bit, and going back to the Breeders' Cup, and I when I lived in Brielle, reading him in the Asbury Park Press, he was some character, and it just happened. I saw Al Gold yesterday, and he and Al were very close. And Tom Lucci as well, of course, who's at Monmouth, and I was really tickled, Monmouth, to be honored that like this by Monmouth is touching, and then to be associated with a writer of Bill's stature and really a guy that everybody loved and respected, and a guy that made sure that racing was always prominent in the paper.
No question, no question. The Asbury Park Press, Monmouth, you know, a day at Monmouth Park, there was something in there, and either Bill wrote it or Steve Jordan, I think, wrote it. But Bill had good columns, especially on the weekends, and loved the game. Just a guy purely actually loved the game. Quick Bill Handelman story. I don't know all the details. All I know is that he liked Sarava in the Belmont Stakes because he hated. Was that in the Medaglia d'Oro Belmont? I think.
No, that was War Emblem.
Was okay.
Well, it was a triple crown try, yeah, and Medaglia d'Oro.
Yeah, but I know War Emblem was all the rage, but Medaglia d'Oro was the horse. He didn't like Medaglia d'Oro. I mean, he didn't like Medaglia d'Oro at all. Loved Sarava, but he goes for the big score. You know, 70-1 wasn't enough. So no win bet, and he blew the exacta. He blew the try. He blew everything. But he could say that he liked Sarava, but he can also has another story. He had another story because he didn't make a dime.
Not that I saw him in action, but he liked to bet a little.
Just a little. Well, no, not just a little.
Well, I want to thank Dennis Drazen and Tom and John Himes and everybody at Monmouth. I say every time Monmouth comes up, it's the first track I was able to attend regularly when I lived in Brielle, and I treasure going down there. I mean, I love the shore anyway, but it's just a magical place.
First racing story I did in, I guess it's 29 years now I've been doing this, was at Monmouth Park Haskell Week. Went into Frank, I told this story a million times, Frank Brothers' office. It was the Monday before the Haskell. It was actually July 22nd. I don't even know what today's date is, but July 22nd, I walked in Frank Brothers' office. I said, "Mr. Brothers, I know you won the Preakness and the Belmont, and that's about all I know." And he sat down with me for about an hour, and I, you know, got my car, drove back to the office, and wrote my first story for the Gentonian on the Haskell on Hansel. Hansel.
You know, and you said the Trentonian, and I always think the Bergen Record.
No, not for me. Trentonian, posts, and the Racing Form.
I don't know why I always thought that your Jersey paper, and you've told plenty of these kinds of stories, why I thought it was the Bergen Record.
So, we all get old.
Thank you. Exactly. I don't even know why I would even think the Bergen.
Put it this way, I'm pretty sure it's a Trentonian because I'm getting old fast, too.
Exactly. Well, but there's always something new, and boy, is this new. I don't think they're going to have much of a crowd today.
My goodness. Drive. I mean, between the, you know, there's a little, what's also rare, what's also new, by the way, is it's not sweltering hot on opening day.
That's true.
And it really has it's not cool, but it has more of a feel of a closing day or something I've never experienced, by the way, is the day after the meet. Because I always go home the night of the meet ending, but this was, to me, it feels like what the day after the meet would be like, not,
people. That's a good analogy.
And been talking to some trainers this morning. The over under on number of times I've heard Erie, I think, would be 4.5 at this point.
Yeah.
You drive by, there's no line down Union Avenue. I did see a few people sitting outside Oklahoma, trying to watch through the fencing, the horses, you know, just to get a taste of the horses, you know, galloping by, and they're not even that close. They put up this mesh on Nelson and part of Union. They put up this mesh, you know, privacy fencing so you can't congregate. I walked in the box seat area. There's chairs stacked on top of each other, and no TVs. It's just very strange. Very strange.
I felt the same way. And when I came in on Tuesday, and of course I've had, you know, you talk about the post-meet atmosphere, and I can address the pre-meet atmosphere from all the years doing the barbecue, and that's, you know, what it looked like when after July 4th you would come. After July 4th is when we would all start to prepare the facility,
right,
for the season, and it looks like it looks July 4th, and of course there he is, Rudy Rod, and that's what's been so, I've been struck with them, and I walk to the end of the grandstand, and all the red chairs that are usually lined up in front of the TVs, those are all stacked up and dirty and dusty and from the winter, and Now, there is going to be some life because the news yesterday that came out at 3 o'clock that you broke...
3:30.
3:30, thank you.
Which was 90 minutes before I thought it was going to come out. I sent a text to Pat McKenna. I said, what are we thinking, 5 o'clock release today? And he, by the way, the Gaming Commission didn't tell Niver that they were putting it out. They just put it out. But that's another story.
The confidence was high that this was going to happen. I kept saying, and just you know, reading the tea leaves, take a page from Silver Linings Playbook. If it's me reading the signs, it felt like they were confident that they were going to get the okay for the owners. The fact that it came, you know, literally on opening day, hours before opening day. And will be executed starting tomorrow, is really kind of upbeat and encouraging, you know, and especially in lieu of what's happening at Del Mar, where not only can't owners go, they're not even going
to
run.
There's nothing to go to.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
But there's the problem, and I was just talking to Martin Panza of NIRA about this, and I got to now call the Gaming Commission. So they say that you can bring 8 people. They all have to be licensed by the Gaming Commission.
Right.
I don't know that everyone who, like, let's just take Sacatoga Stable. Do they have do all of them have a license? And how do they prove they're with that horse? Yeah, you know, they might have a license, but they don't. How do they prove that they're with Sacatoga Stable?
Well, I think that this is where the reservation portion comes in. You're going to, you know, when you're going to email Horseman's Relations, and you know, by the way, that was another way on Tuesday when I came in, and Teal Albertrani and Elise Jacobs and the new addition Harper, when I saw the three of them there in the Horseman's Relations office, I'm thinking they didn't bring three up here.
Right.
To, you know, just to sit in that office day
right.
after day.
Right.
So that was a sign that the owner thing was happening. What's going to have to happen is you make a reservation, you say, here I am, this is my horse, and here's my people, which then gives Horseman's Relations the opportunity to check with credential
right.
about who's licensed, essentially.
Okay. Because Martin made it sound like it was not, like it's going to be very difficult to prove who's, like, because NIRA, I guess, they're asked for an owner and guests. So, like, so let's say it's Jack Knowlton, and he can bring, I don't know that NIRA asked for 8, I think, I don't know how it got to 8, but NIRA and, you know, an owner and guests, so this sort of, they could bring, they didn't have to go through all that. And then you give the name of the guest, but that's not how it's going to, all these people have to have an actual Gaming Commission license, New York Gaming Commission license. There might be someone with Sacatoga who wants to come who lives somewhere else and doesn't necessarily have a...
That's
some stuff I have to check into. I mean, West Point, too. I mean, they got... I'm sure they all want to come Saturday to watch Decorated Invader win the Hall of Fame Stakes. Running the Hall of Fame Stakes.
Well, Guffo...
He will not run.
Oh, he's... Now Chris is... Okay.
I don't think he ever was planning on running.
Okay.
Maybe they changed their mind. I think he's there as insurance for 2 things. To make sure the race went.
Yeah.
And to make sure something happened. You know, Decorated Invader gets a temperature or something. I doubt that Guffo runs if Decorated Invader runs. That's just my thought. I could be wrong. And he could change his mind.
That makes sense. I'll ask Pat as well when he joins us. I know that there is a second press release coming out this morning because Martin said that there were some additional little nuancey elements to it.
Okay.
You know, the other question that is germane is what if you're an owner coming from a state that New York has on the restricted
they
list?
They said that
for 14 days.
You have to be in quarantine for 14 days. You can't. That's what their release said. That if somebody comes from one of those, I guess it's now 26 states, maybe they have to be. So if you're coming, you can't. Essentially, the first 2 weeks you wouldn't be able to come if you're not here. But if you have a horse running, pick 14 days. I guess maybe Whitney. August 1st races, then I guess you could, you know, if you come now. But I mean, now do you have a place to come to, or are you going to spend 14 nights in a hotel to pay 14 nights in a hotel so you can come to the track to sit in a picnic area? I mean, it's not really the most appetizing scenario, by the way, for the owners. You're going to sit in a picnic table, watch it on a big screen. They might have a better place to watch it in their house and wherever they live and watch it on the big screen and not have to go through the expense. So as much as it's nice that the owners get a chance to come, almost think it's done in such a way to say, to almost discourage that from happening, unless you live up here or come up here.
And I think that, like, when we think about people like Alex and Joanne Lieblong, you know, that are, you know, have a place, and the Reeves, Dean and Patty Reeves, you know, they're going to be here all summer. Mrs. Weber, you know, they've got, they're here. So for the owners that are here seemingly year in, year out, this is a very gracious accommodation. And, you know, for my, knock on wood, I'm trying to think, most of our partners, for instance, if they're going to come, they're from New York. And I think we got Michael Caprio is in Rhode Island. I think most of them are within, you know, the pale of settlement.
Now, let me just ask you, so you run under DT Stable?
Yes.
Okay. So you're the head, you're the managing partner of DT Stable.
Yes.
So the people that are coming that own with you,
yes,
they have New York Gaming Commission licenses?
They do.
Okay.
They do.
And they can say, look, I'm with Kid Chocolate.
Yes.
Or whoever's running, and they can prove, Naira is able to prove that those people
exactly.
are...
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
Because that's what Martin was making it sound like, that's, you know, not necessarily the way it happened.
We'll get clarification on this, because I'm sure people are right away are asking questions. And we do have, we've got it. I'm going to give you an email. Martin promised me he would give me the email to write for these kinds of arrangements. And I'll give out the phone number for Horsemen's Relations for those that are
I think there's a frustration level here from their standpoint. Like, it just would have been easier if they said, okay, you make the reservation, you're going to bring your six, let's say you have seven partners, and you give the names, and you're telling Elise that these seven people are okay.
Right.
And I almost have a feeling that those seven people now have to do it themselves. And maybe I'm wrong on that. But it almost sounds like the individuals have to do it themselves, as opposed to you saying, because you can't say, in essence, if you do it, you're saying that you're bringing guests. Well, you're not, but like all your partners then have to individually call, and that would be ridiculous, because then they're taking eight calls for one horse when it could actually just take one.
That's a good point. All right, we will continue to do all we can to advise and give everybody the specifics and help you through this, and we'll give you all the direction. Let's talk about the meet itself, and of course, one of the other stories, Dave, that emerged, the jockey, the lockdown for the riders. What has been the storyline from your side of the fence in terms of, you know, who is going to be iced out essentially of riding opportunities for maybe for stake horses that they've been associated with?
Well, I guess most notably Mike Smith, in a situation where if Bob Baffert shipped horses in, and obviously most notably Midnight Bisou, who's supposed to run the Purse of Lenten, he could not come. I guess a guy like Florent Giroux, who has his own issues right now anyway, with the COVID, I don't think he's not going to be able to come. So those sort of people got, as far as coming to Saratoga at some point, they won't be able to come. As far as the immediate, like, this was announced on Tuesday, I believe, and Wednesday they're taking entries for the Haskell, the Jersey card. So I knew Irad wanted to go, and then I heard that Santana had a couple of mounts, not in the Haskell per se, but I guess he had the She's a Julie for the Molly Pitcher. So he was going to go down there, and then immediately those agents said, no, we're not going to, because if it wasn't a scenario where they could go and then come back. Once they're not going to sacrifice one, the whole meet for one day. So those two jockeys specifically, bagged the Monmouth trip. Now, I don't know what's happening for Mike Smith, if he can go to Monmouth or not, because I saw something on Twitter, which isn't always accurate, by the way, just to let you know. Not everything on Twitter is accurate. I haven't seen any Del Mar notifications, official notifications,
right.
And I don't necessarily say that they contact me or anything, but I haven't seen anything officially from Del Mar or Monmouth that's saying that they're locking down the jockeys. I do expect that release to come as soon as Mike Smith's plane touches down in Southern California on Sunday morning. But I believe he'll be able to go to the Haskell and then can go back to Del Mar once they start riding again, I believe. But those are the most prominent guys, Drew, and I guess Leperu fits in there too. I'm sure Leperu would come here. I think the biggest issue is, and they kind of poo-pooed it a little bit on me, but maybe it's one of those things we'll worry about it when we get to it, is what's going to happen the final week here,
yes,
when you've got 10 jockeys that are listed in the condition book that are going to ride here, that are going to go to the Derby, and then you have maybe two more who aren't riding here that are in condition book going. So then you're going to be down about 10 jockeys for the closing week here, unless you get some kind of waiver on that. So my guess is they will try to get a waiver at some point later in the meet, but it'll just have to be something that they deal with down the road. And they could say to the state, look, we're not going to be able to run this last week unless we sort of look, we'll test these people and make sure they're in. But, you know, you're going to have a scenario where a lot of these guys are going to flock to the Derby, assuming that the Derby lets them in, when Churchill lets them in, which I have to think. I mean, you can't tell 10 jockeys here who have 10 mounts that they can't ride the Derby. You're going to take 10 guys from here and go there, and you're going to leave this place with 10 or 12. I don't know, you know, that's not going to work.
Well, and certainly, you know, Ortiz's and Manny and Johnny and
Rosario. And Franco.
Yeah, Manny, absolutely. With Tis the Law, Barkley Tag actually just ran into the racing office.
I circled 10. I had 10 names that I just happened to just check off to say. So I had Castellano. I'm sure Cohen will go there. Franco, Gaffleone. Both Ortiz's, Rosario, Saez, Santana, Velasquez. So that's 10. And that leaves you Junior, Cancel, Davis, Hector Diaz. Giroux is in the book. He can't ride here, so scratch him out. Gutierrez, Hernandez, Leperu's in the book. He's not here. Scratch him out. So it's 10 names I gave you and two that aren't even going to be here. So I'm telling you, if they don't get it changed, they're not going to have a closing week. So they're going to have to get that changed by the first week in September.
A fair point. Yeah, yesterday nobody wanted to really delve into that.
And they didn't want to delve into it 5 minutes ago or 10 minutes ago when I was talking to them. The answer was, well, then we just won't have a closing week. I said, okay, good luck.
Okay.
Explain that to the board members.
That seems a little kooky. Yeah. Tyler Gaffleone is probably the name that's most interesting. He's riding for us actually today on Minute Mouse in the seventh.
Right.
Gaffleone probably the most notable the new face that.
He was here last year,
but seemingly coming in at a much different level off of the Keeneland success. And
I think he did it last. I think I'd say it's the second year he's done this. You know, he'll fit right in. There's not a lot of. There's not a lot of Kentucky outfits here, or at least at the moment. So I didn't see Romans. I didn't see any Romans horses back there yet. Maybe he's coming later. There's Cassie's here, and Asmussen's here, but he doesn't really use him. I'm not sure I saw too many other. You know, there's a lot of empty barns back there, Steve. That's another concerning factor that they seem to want to poo-poo.
Well, talk about that from your discussion with people like Alinda Rice, for instance, who had 40 stalls allotted, and she turned back 30 of them. She's got 10 horses active, and she's going to keep swinging them back and forth. Essentially, I mean, Gary, I talked to Gary about this. Gary's doing, he's kind of splitting the baby. He's got about half here and half he's leaving at Belmont, and it's a question of staffing.
Help is a big issue.
Yes.
Help, or lack thereof. Is a big issue for everybody back there, and one of the key issues is that people who come up, Brad Cox, the same thing. He was, he turned back 20 out of 30, I believe, and they have help that after they work in the morning, they come to the front side, and either they bus tables or they direct traffic or they're in they have another job on the front side. Those jobs obviously are not available
this
year. Linda, what Linda was saying is some of her help, they bring their families up here and their kids go to some sort of day camp or maybe some sort of camp that's either closed or, they just don't feel comfortable sending them there.
Right.
So they've asked to stay home. And, so after when you factor in all of that, plus the expense of coming up here and the fact that some of these people, like a Jimmy Toner, said, I just got to New York. I just got back. I just unpacked my bags. So I got to pack. We got to move again. So you're going to have a lot of people Jimmy Jerkins. He's only got a handful of up here. So you're going to have guys who ship in from Belmont. Now, the problem with that is, so they pick up the overnight. They enter several days out. You pick up the overnight. You look and say, oh, I can't beat this horse, this horse, this horse. Maybe I should scratch. So you come up with some, temperature, stone brew, something, or you just find a better spot at Monmouth. I'm waiting to look at the overnight when the old you can't ship out of town doctrine comes down. That'll be the second lockdown. We got the jockeys locked down. Now Belmont will be under quarantine from the standpoint of only vans can go north. You can't go south
or west.
Right.
It's exactly. I mean, these first three cards. I mean, what's your initial? You know, it's kind of a feast famine situation where there's certain levels, and particularly the New York bred races have been, you know, well, which is predictable. They're
right.
Well attended, and they'll be very competitive and very bettable. The open company allowances, they've never been particularly strong in terms of, you know, big 10 horse fields. You're typically looking at 6, 7, 8, mostly 6 right now. And without a Rusty Arnold and without some of those.
Brian Lynch.
Brian Lynch.
He's not coming. It's a little concerning. Look, Saturday's card, there was 91 entries, right? 11 race card, there's 91 entries. 7 of them are MTOs. So let's say we don't have an issue. So now you're down to 84. Just on that, before you have the first scratch. And I'll go out on a limb and say Gufo is going to scratch. So now you're down to 83. So you have a 5-horse stakes. I don't want to get too, you know, I don't want to be too alarmist right off the bat. I mean, maybe things will change as we kind of move along. But it is a... It is a little disconcerting to, you know, usually there's just a buzz. I'm at Belmont and a lot of times, all the time. And, you know, you just, no one was like, well, you know, I can't wait to get up there. Like, nobody, not one, nobody, zero. And it shows, you know, kind of shows in the entries.
Well, and the problem that is going to double back to. If the field size numbers are not robust, the anticipated volume, handle volume, that they're looking for here will be difficult to attain.
Let's see. I'm going to take the show me,
Yes.
I'm going to take the show me on either end. Show me it's going to be better. Let me see. Because people are dying to bet on something.
Yeah.
And no, they don't have Del Mar. And I mean, what, you know, Monmouth is sort of light. You know, obviously, look, Monmouth has a very good Saturday card, which they should. After Saturday, they will. You know, that'll. That's not going to happen. So, let's see how the handle is. I'm not going to make any preconceived notions. I'm not agreeing with their assessment, Naira's assessment that it's going to be that. That's going to be that much better. But I'm not disagreeing with it either because I just don't know. We haven't been in this situation. If you look at the numbers at Belmont, the last week was not that good. Part of it was that one weather day, and part of it is you were going up against Keeneland. So you're not going up against anything really major right now.
Good point.
You've got your own little issues with field size. We'll see how it plays out. But people are dying to bet on something. The other sports, we'll see if that happens. Does that have an effect when they come online? Baseball starts next Thursday. I don't bet baseball. I don't know who does. I'm not saying that...
Maury Wolf.
Okay. I don't know how that's going to play out. But, you know, when you have baseball and basketball and hockey all going at the same time, now they've got options. Right now, this is the option. People still love to bet on Saratoga,
yep.
Whether it's
yep.
6 or 8 or 10. Look, the more the merrier. They'd rather bet on more horses. But if you have a 6-horse field that's competitive... Is it that much different than it's a 10-horse field when you could throw out four, when you get the big 99-to-1s on the screen?
I disagree.
Mean, so if the shorter fields are competitive races, they'll bet it. If you get a race, you're going to get that race where Decorated Invader is going to be 1-to-5 tomorrow and Saturday, they're not going to bet it. They'll try and, which is why it's race 3. It's in the early pick 5, and it's out of everything later in the day.
They've been dealing with that, and you know, the racing office in terms of scheduling and the setting up of the cards, you know, making sure that the late pick 5 is well stocked, etc. So when it comes to some of the prime conversation points, let's talk about these first 3 days, Dave. And as it happens, tomorrow has got those two restricteds that I love. The De La Rose and the Shine Again are a lot of fun. The conditions of horses that have not won a sweepstakes, over the period of time, always makes for competitive racing. But today, some thoughts about the Schuylerville and the Peter Pan.
The Peter Pan's an interesting race. It's interesting that they even brought it back, and I guess it's interesting they got as many horses as they did. I was thinking this might be a, you know, easy go or redo. You know, just not getting that. But you've got Modernist coming back, trying to figure out what the heck went wrong in the Belmont Stakes. Not that he was supposed to win the race, but I don't think he was supposed to get beat 20 lengths. You've got an interesting horse in Mystic Guide, who was second to tap it to win in that very fast allowance race. I think Mystic Guide getting back out around two turns, and you know, hopefully they can find a little pace in the race that he can, you know, sit and make the one run, and I think that's what he prefers to do. You got an interesting horse, Caracaro from Gustavo Delgado, who, you know, whets your appetite with a six-length victory on January 11th at Gulfstream Park, and then goes in the witness protection program. What do you make of Candy Tycoon? I don't know what to make of that horse. He was second in the Fountain of Youth, but he was second beating a mile, and then he was second in an allowance race to a horse that was a bad third in the Bluegrass, Rushy. Interesting race. I would tend to go with Mystic Guy. The Schuylerville, I had a conversation with Jose Ortiz, and Mike had a conversation with Mark Cassie about beautiful memories being at the training center one day when Jose Ortiz was visiting, and the horse goes by in a workout, and Cassie points to the filly and to Ortiz and says, "You want to be on that one." And this is when Ortiz was off for the injury and then the COVID stuff. And then Ortiz said, "Well, I'll be there at Churchill. That's my plan." And so he put her on, and she wins by 10. And, you know, very impressive performance, and now, you know, shows up here. The other interesting story is a hopeful princess, for Steve Asmussen. So I asked Steve, I said, "Well, how did you get this horse?" And, the horse, who was trained by John Hancock, beat a horse called Mad Maddie that Asmussen trained. And so when he found out that Stone Street was looking at the horse, he said, "Well, just to let you know, I'm high on the horse that she beat." So Stone Street got the deal done and gave it to Asmussen. So it's an interesting. And then, you know, Asmussen, to try and get quickly associated with this filly, pops her out of the gate on the training track when 48-3 the other day. I was not here for it, but and she drew nicely on the outside.
Nice. Speaking of these two main tracks, stakes today, what have you been hearing from the horsemen about the reconditioned surface and the drainage that was put down?
Chad Brown raves about it. Steve Asmussen worked a couple of horses on it on Monday, and he was pretty high about it. And he's not a fan, you know, he hasn't been necessarily a fan on the main track. So the fact that he's had some positive reviews on the main track is good. So far, I haven't heard any negatives. The only negative I heard is in some points it plays a little too fast. You know, there's some, you know, I guess the work tab showed a couple of sub 46 works, I guess.
Wow.
Now, I don't know if that's the horse or how that's, you know, or what, but I'm interested to see how that plays out today too, and I guess we're supposed to get some rain tomorrow, so it'll test how quickly it drains out.
Well, we'll see. We everything is measured by the drainage at Churchill. Does it drain like Churchill, or is the drain? It's got to be.
Sponges don't drain like Churchill.
It's got to be better than, you know, than given the way the rain comes down here is really part of that story. I mean, is the inundation we get in 15 minutes, and then
a rainbow pops up.
Exactly, and it doesn't, you know, it's a different kind of rain, and there's been, you know, certainly since I've been around 20 plus years, there's, you know, been areas of the track that are become problematic, yeah, and have washed out and so forth.
This is supposed to stop that.
Yeah, exactly. That and I saw, you know, I knew, it's funny, I think Tina and I think we went to Pinnell's one night, and this was back in the winter and pre-pandemic, and I saw that they were lifting up the cushion, that they were piling all the dirt, and then I saw the dark material that looked like sand, like a silicate or a crushed stone. And I sent a text to Glenn, and I said, "Are you putting down a drainage layer?" And he said, "Yes." And so I kind of saw it's also higher.
It's supposed to be a little bit higher, yes.
So that'll be, it's going to be different in a lot of ways. So we'll watch for that. And the first race, of course, today starts right in front of the fans.
Right in front of the SP Grandstand.
Yeah. So we'll see. A mile and an eighth starts things off, and we'll be watching that storyline. Tomorrow, the big storyline, of course, was Chad throwing the kitchen sink at the De La Rose. And, you know, this really, you know, for his barn, it's a real good opportunity for those allowance horses or some returnees to try to get black type in a restricted race. And the De La Rose, it's been one of my, ever since it came around, it's been one of my favorite races. And this is a good group of eight. Chad's got half the field.
Well, it's going to be 7 because Blowout has a temperature, so Blowout's going to scratch. Okay. And she looked like the lone speed in the race.
So that changes things up.
So that does change things a little bit about Zenobia. Zenobia's better races were last year when she was forwardly placed. I'm not sure why we started, you know, I guess we, you know, the Bessarabian last year and then the Bogey this year were trying to get off the pace. I'm not sure why. She's better when she's forwardly placed. She won the Athenia when she was forwardly placed. She was a good second in a maiden race, in an allowance race when she was forwardly placed. I would expect her to be forwardly placed. Catch a Bid is the one of Chad's that interests me the most. I just thought her comeback race was she was on the lead, but there was no pace in the race at all. So she has that versatility that if Zenobia doesn't go, then she catch a bit could. But also she won the risk averse here from a bit off the pace, off a slow pace, and got up to win that race mile on yielding Saratoga turf. Like I said, it's supposed to rain tomorrow, so she might actually fit the conditions really well. Passing Out's been training very well. I saw her a couple of breezes since her last race. She's training very well. I just think she's reliant on a pace. Her best races, the race at Tampa 2 back and the race at Saratoga here last year, when she got solid enough pace. I don't know that she gets that here. I wouldn't leave her off my tickets, but I'd also be leery to just go with her because, you know, fly solo with her just because I just don't know where the pace comes from.
That second time North America, too, cutting back for a mile for Chad, Noor Sahara.
Yeah, Noor Sahara, he told me that he ran her a mile and eighth just because there was no other place to run her. He got washed out on a stake at Gulfstream. Aqueduct canceled the meet, obviously, and this was sort of plan C for this horse. Maybe even plan D, there might have been another spot, but he didn't really, you know, he knows that she's not a mile and eighth horse, but cutting back to a mile is probably going to be better for her. I wonder is how good is she? I know they brought her over from France. I'm just not sure how good she really is.
And I do want to mention Brad Cox, and let me look at the morning line. Clara Peters is 5-1 and third North America. And how many horses does Sol Cumin have a hand in here?
How many are in here?
There's.
I think the only people that don't let him cut in on their horses is Judmont, I think, right?
Clara
and Augustin.
He's got Clara Peters a piece, and he's got a piece of Noor Sahara. So
only two. Okay,
just the two.
I thought the Phipps signed him and let him come in on this.
Clara Peters looks okay. This is a stallion, an Australian stallion. Epaulette, that I'm unfamiliar with. I'll have to ask Sid. And she looks like she's ready to take a step forward.
Yeah, I mean, her race is she won a nice 7/8 race down at Belmont. I think Lady Lawyer is in today, so you get a line on that. She beat Lady Lawyer. Lady Lawyer's in, I think it's today for Chad. So you'll get an idea a little bit from that standpoint. And, I wasn't thrilled with her last breeze. She was switching leads back and forth, but that sticks in my head. That's the only thing. Not to say she can't perform well. It's just that's when they're all evenly matched like that, and you're looking for little nuances to maybe little things to maybe pick apart. That's the only thing.
The Shine again, 7/8. Phillies on the main, and again, these are always fun because these are a lot of times they're either stake nibblers or horses that are coming back from layoffs that maybe like look at Please Flatter Me in here, second time for Asmussen, and of course multiple stake winner last year as a 3-year-old, and coming in off of a little bit of a leg stretcher. How about Blamed showing up in this spot as well? For Bill Mott, and then there's some horses that like an Honor Way, for instance, Charlie Baker for Saul Kupperberg, Indian Pride for Chad. I mean, there's some.
And I'll give
class.
You one more that's interesting to me. Positive Spirit. Last time we saw Positive Spirit, she dumped the rider coming out of the gate for the Kentucky Oaks, and hasn't been seen in 13. It'll be 14 months.
Wow.
She debuted up here as a 2-year-old when she was with Rudy Brissett. She was third. Going the 7/8, and then she wound up winning the Demoiselle by 10. It wasn't a great running of the Demoiselle, I get it, but she was good enough to do it. And then she was second in the Gazelle when she was with Rudy. Now she's with Stidham, and I think the 7/8 is probably something that it's a good starting point, but it might actually be the one turn might be what she really wants to do, even though she's won around two turns. But Stidham does a nice job coming back off the freshenings. He's got almost 20% off these long layoffs, and even Ignacio Correas, Joy Epifora, he thinks this filly, he doesn't necessarily think it might be tomorrow. It'll be tomorrow, but he thinks this filly has, you know, graded stakes caliber ability. She was a Group 1 winner twice in Argentina in her youth, and she ran an okay race off the layoff first time for him. So it's a very deep race, is what we're saying.
Dave Grenig with us on opening day at Saratoga. And Dave, the action on Saturday, coaching club, we kind of alluded to a little bit, as well as the Hall of Fame. We also start to get the two-year-olds season started. Did I miss your Dave,
your
Jay Privman equivalent, the two-year-old piece?
Yes, it should be in there.
It's in the paper today?
It's in the Thursday paper, yes. I don't think any of mine are in here. I thought there was a Kimmel horse that I was thinking was going to show up there, Zenith Moon, who he's very high on, but he did not show up. There's only six. Momos is one for Clement. I know that he's high on. And then Repo Rocks for Mott. Here's a good tip for you, for your listeners. I did not get a hold of Mott this year. Last year I led it with Mott, and he won like two or three races. I expect Mott to win about 10 two-year-old races, and he'll never go over two-year-olds with me again. But Repo Rocks has a series of works that it will probably make, you know, that will be eye-catching when you pick up the paper. But most of mine, you know, here's the thing with the two-year-olds this year and with the, you know, like especially the Pletcher. Pletcher's only run in 10 two-year-old races, or has 10 horses that started in two-year-old races this year, which is, by this time, he's usually won a bunch.
Yeah.
You know, usually he sips them up here May 1st. We didn't open here until June 3rd, so, you know, the backstretch. So he's 30 days behind. I'd say Chad is about 30 days behind with some of them. So I'd say that the better ones you're going to see are going to be later, you know, mid to late meet. And then maybe what the benefit will be for the Belmont Fall Meet is maybe the two-year-old program at the Belmont Fall Meet will pick up. Because I think a lot of guys are late with these two-year-olds, except Steve Asmussen.
True, and with the sale, you know, one more day today, and there'll be a bunch of the two-year-olds that will be distributed out into the world. We'll start to, you know, start to bulk up a little bit on the two-year-olds. So I'll look for your piece, and I always put yours and Jay's together, and we watch as the two-year-olds spill out. Andy already anointed Repo Rocks for Mott and as the fastest horse in the world on Saturday.
Oh,
he's confident there's going to be a strong buzz about Repo.
Oh, who knows more about what's happening on the backstretch than Andy Sterling?
Well, it's actually he seems to catch on, and it's going to be weird. I mean, you know, not having that you know, that is an interesting sidebar. Without the usual ambient, you know, workout watchers, and I mean, not that there aren't still, you know, plenty of clockers.
We have the DRF workout report,
well, exactly,
led by Mike Welch and
Donald
will be here, Harris,
and they'll be here later. Mike is going to join us for a push. He's actually doing the set today at 10:30. But I am curious that word of mouth. You know, snowball buzz that you get. Maybe that might be limited.
No,
it'll still be.
There's nobody at Belmont Park, and there's still that word of mouth that gets out. So whoever's got the word of mouth, they got a big mouth.
That's pretty good, Dave. Coaching club or Hall of Fame thoughts?
Well, the Hall of Fame is still decorated innovator. I don't see anybody beating him. The coaching club's interesting a little bit. I'm not sold. Tonal of Shape is a mile and an eighth horse. I let her prove it, and I'll probably let her beat me at a short price. It's interesting that Bill's putting Antoinette back on the dirt, and then Paris Lights, who's kind of flying under the well, she's 2-1 morning line. I wouldn't say she's flying under the radar, but she's. It's interesting also that Velvet, that the Windstar stablemates decided to enter both those two fillies. Crystal Ball coming in for Bob Baffert, who's. Last race was pretty good, but it was a short field, and she got loose on the lead. I asked Bob yesterday if, you know, does she have to be on a lead? And, you know, you got the old same, you know, the same trainer speak. Nobody ever said the only one who said their horse, the only trainer who's ever said their horse has to be on a lead is Tom Amos with Serengeti Empress.
That's true.
I applaud him for being honest when he talks
about
it.
You're right. That's a fair point.
But Crystal Ball, basically, he said, what I should have said is, he said is her first race, she just wasn't prepared to go long. It didn't matter that she didn't get the lead. She just wasn't ready to go long. She improved greatly from that race to her maiden race, in which she was on the front end and then did win. So, you know, it's an interesting race. It's only a six-horse field. I don't know that there's a strong... I mean, Total in Shape will be a strong favorite. I just don't know that she has to win.
He's putting the blinkers on,
it's
too.
It's weird when you take a horse that's 6-for-7 without blinkers and then put blinkers on.
Yeah.
And you can ask Mike Welsh about this, because actually Safi Joseph Jr. mentioned Mike Welsh during the national NTRA conference call yesterday, saying, he asked a lot of respected people what they thought about her in blinkers, and he says everybody, including Mike Welsh, thinks she trains better in the blinkers. Now, my thing is, she probably trains faster in the blinkers. Does that mean
is
she
that
trains better in the blinkers?
Right.
I haven't seen her, so I can't comment. Mike Welsh has. I would ask him.
And sometimes with that, it can be a focus thing. You know, a lot of times trainers will tell you that the horses get freaked, they got horses on either side of them, and they get good, so you put the blinkers on them so that they're looking, you know, in one direction,
right.
But the focus portion of things sometimes typically with horses that are too smart for their own good, that are curious, that are looking around and you know,
I guess my concern
sights.
My concern would be if it's making her work faster, that means she's probably going to go faster,
yeah.
And now she's got to go further, so she's got to go faster to go further. You want to go a little slower to go further, don't you? You want to save, you want to conserve a little energy. So if you're using yourself early, and then you got another 16th, she gets to the 16th pole, and she's like, oh, I've got to go another 16th.
Yeah.
And then somebody comes and nails her. That would be the way I look at it. Now, the other flip side of that is, at the 16th pole, she may be 8 in front, so if she does get tired, it won't matter.
Well, and that's it. That's the Serengeti, the run them off their feet
right.
philosophy. Going two turns, it makes it a little easier for her, as opposed to a one-turn configuration that she he's been involved in mostly at Gulfstream. So get on the backstretch, and now so we'll see. I don't know. I've been wrong on her.
Me too.
Every single start, I think.
I can't
figure it out.
Yeah. So I might as well not. I mean, and for 4-5, I might as well try and be wrong again.
Couple of just looking ahead, Dave. Next, you know, the early part of the meet here. What are we watching for?
I guess next week, the Vanderbilt. We got Volatile and Mind Control.
And Whitmore, right?
I guess. And then looking, the Whitney is, you know, they're a little light right now. But I was talking, not that this is going to be earth-shattering stuff, but I was talking to John Terranova today, and they're looking at running Funny Guy, who was very impressive in the commentator stakes. Basically, you've got Code of Honor and Tom's the Etat, or Tom's the Etat and Code of Honor, however you want to, or your marquee names. It might be, you know, by my standards, I think it's considering it. But Funny Guy, you know, just kind of interesting. Maybe he's the commentator of the group. You know,
yeah.
Commentator, New York bred, who won the race twice. I believe that track condition depending on the track condition, Kislaw will have his first local work here Friday or Saturday as he continues on for the Travers. Bob Baffert's planning on sending Uncle Chuck for the Travers. Don't know. You know, Bob always makes his decisions later than earlier. I am a little intrigued. I don't know if I didn't look at the noms yet, but now with Del Mar having to cancel, would he consider Maximum Security for the Whitney? That's a big ask off the layoff, but you know, if he can't run the San Diego, what's going to happen there?
Yeah, and shipping him across the country. Although they may be running the San Diego next week.
They cannot be running.
Or they may not. You're a fair point.
All they had to do was basically tell you we're not running this week. They didn't have to announce anything, yay or nay, next week.
You're right.
It's not a guarantee that they're coming back a week from tomorrow.
Yeah.
Today's Thursday. Today's opening day, right?
It's opening day. And getting...
I'm telling you, the breeze is picking up, and it's starting to feel like closing day.
It is. It does have a September.
Look at the leaves. The leaves are green.
It is weird. It is very strange right now that it's cool too.
This is not open. This is not summer.
It's not summery. That's for sure. I'm glad somebody asked me, "Are you going to go casual in Saratoga?" No, I'm not going casual. Come on.
I might.
Yeah, I
haven't picked out my outfit for the day, but I might.
Well, Dave, I really appreciate the expanded kickoff to the season, and it's going to be a new experience. That's the bottom.
And if you can make it down there, you should make it down there for the Haskell.
I'm going to do my best.
You know, get that award, and there'll be some people there. It's the best day of racing in Jersey. You should be there for it. And again, congratulations and well deserved.
Too kind. Dave Groening, everybody. And we look forward to checking in with Dave. And we'll probably get some Mike Beer opinions as the summer unfolds. And we're getting close. Are the start times going to be standard, the 110? Are we good?
The steeplechase day is 12:50.
Yeah, okay. So, and we're looking forward next week to talk to Bill Gallo, speaking of chasing. Let's chase down Tony Black and Steve Haskin yet, and Pat McKenna is going to join us, Mike Welch as well. And we'll take our first break this morning, live from Saratoga, back after this.
Racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Developed by Horsemen, HorseBills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, environment-friendly, paperless revolution of how equine industries bill and receive payments. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for each horse, whose owners can pay through the same website with just one click. Say goodbye to stacks of invoices, handwritten checks, and postage costs. Easy accounting for all parties with the highest online security measures. Get started free at HorseBills.com. Simply register with your name and email address. Free to sign up. No subscription fees to vendors until the first invoice. Voices sent. For owners, you get a free account, comprehensive dashboard with information on all horses owned and billing records, ACH and credit card payment options. For vendors, generate invoices efficiently and receive payments quickly from both owners and other vendors. Syndicate and partnership managers get flexible billing and payment options to both vendors and syndicate members. For more info, call 888-938-4643, 888-938-4643, or log on to horsebills.com. That's horsebills.com.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the 5 Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
DRF Sports Form Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sports Form delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsform. Enter code DRF Sports.
Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.